From World Renew, the Office of Social Justice, and the Center for Public Dialogue of the Christian Reformed Church of North America, this is the Do Justice Podcast.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Do Justice. We're excited today to dive into some conversations to start our thread for this series of episodes to sort of talk about unique approaches to doing development work, to doing justice work, to really look at holistic ways that we can help and to stay in it for the long haul. And we have a really special guest here, John Klein Geltink. John, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here with us.
Glad to be here.
Awesome. So, John, you're a diaconal coach with Diaconal Ministries Canada. And in your bio on their website, you say that you wholeheartedly support and encourage asset-based community development so that churches can avoid harming the ones that they aim to serve. And you said to ask you about it. So here we are. We're here to ask you about it. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And we want to get into specifically Operation Sharing, but like tell us about how you got so passionate about this.
Well, I think it was being involved with Diaconal Ministries since 1987. I've been in there for the long haul, but anyways, a number of years ago, we started reading books, and there's one book, Walking with the Poor by Brian Myers. Read that one. And there's another one that was out, it might have been out before that, but that led me on to reading the book, Toxic Charity, with Bob Lupton. And then started reading some of the works by John McKnight. He's the one that really did a lot of work on the asset-based community development. Then again, the book When Helping Hurts was another thread that they all seem to have similar messages, or the theme that ran through all those books was quite similar. So I thought, well, there's, and then, you know, I started thinking about that a lot. And then, it was just fortunate that we had this organization in Oxford County that I, when I saw what they're doing with our Food for Friends card, I'll get into that a little bit later, but it had the same kind of values that, was how they used it in a practical way. So
before we, like, I want to hear more about Operation Sharing and the idea of the cards, because that's, to me, that's so cutting edge and it makes a ton of sense. And yeah, I'll let you explain that, but you listed off a bunch of books and, you know, for, you know, those of us who are in the Diaconal Ministries Canada or World Renew sphere, and in the wider, I think, in the wider sort of justice community within the CRCNA, When Helping Hurts, Toxic Charity, those are all staples. Like they're on my shelf back there too. Like those are sort of guiding books. But did you feel when you first sort of started hearing this, was there a sense of, oh man, like there's a lot of change that needs to happen? Or like what, how did you react to hearing these concepts for the first time?
Well, I started questioning a lot of things that started coming out, especially like in North America with the whole food banks thing it's paternalism. And that's one thing that all the books talked about, to avoid paternalism at all costs. So that was something that really kind of stuck, and then it kind of changed the way I looked at ministries that were happening and tried to evaluate it. And that was one of the things I always look at, you know, if it's being holistic, but also some of the aspects or practical things that can be done by an organization to kind of avoid that paternalism and look at strengths. Although a lot of people that are in poverty don't recognize that they have strengths or something to contribute. And yeah, so that's something I think that is kind of countercultural. And I thought it was just an opportunity to kind of change the story a bit.
Yeah. Thanks for that, John. And now let's switch gears a bit. Let's talk about Operation Sharing. Tell us about that and how they're an unconventional food bank and why it's important.
Well, I think it does a number of things. First of all, we look at the dignity of the individual to try to have them involved rather than sending a parcel of food, that they have the choice of shopping where the rest of us shop. Also recognizing that most of them know how to cook or something like that. It isn't a deficit that, you know, they have the ability to do that. And having them involved, but also so it's inclusive is one of the values we have too, that we have people that they don't have a special place or something where the poor go. We want to integrate them to stuff that's already in the community and be involved in the community just like everyone else, and give them to do the opportunity to have a choice of the foods that they like and are good at using. Yeah, so that was part of it. And then I think it's also an opportunity to kind of put a message out there that they always talk about food insecurity, and everybody's busy trying to figure out, it's probably kind of an extension of the mindset of food banks, is where we have to do stuff for the poor or set up programs for the poor. And yeah, we have to figure out, you know, okay, in all these ministries, how do we have those that we are serving actively involved with it?
Wow. Yeah.
And maybe even be in the driving force, because they can tell us what they need.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. With us, we're with a lot of it. If we're have a program or something, we're assuming this is what they need. And it puts a more holistic picture too, I think, because you're not the narrative outs there. I think that it's similar to what World Renew has the same concepts as we do, is saying, we don't go into a community with programs. We go talk to the individuals to help them design programs. Mm. So that's something that's kind of similar. So
right. So really, the picture that you're painting, and I think what we're all trying to sort of get on board with, is the idea of like doing with rather than doing for.
Right. Right.
What have you seen? What happens in a person's life? So, for instance, someone who participates in Operation Sharing, like, have you seen sort of the effects of, wow, I'm a participant here. I'm not just someone who's here to receive.
Yeah.
What does that do in someone's life when they're able to participate rather than just show up and receive?
It builds up their confidence a fair bit. And they come out and they talk more about, like, we had one mother of a teenager quite proudly came in to pick up her card. And she was talking about how her and her daughter had made homemade pasta. And I figured, if somebody's able to do that, do we really need to give them a parcel of food?
Yeah.
And then there's others that have come in and said, well, it's... like one lady we did an interview on, and she come out and said that, you know, it gave her an opportunity to pick things out she wanted for supper rather than somebody else telling them.
Right.
And how, or picked it out, and she talked about how it was kind of humiliating. So yeah, so that's a number of things. And we've also had people that had health issues, young families saying, you know, my kids go to school, and I want to be able to put, you know, give them what I feel the kids need for breaks rather than somebody else. So that's, supports people to, you know, have even control. Like, I mean, especially if they're parents and they have kids and stuff like that, it's something that certainly puts that onus back on the parents, or gives them the opportunity to take some control over that.
I'm envisioning, like, you know, imagine, you know, good, well-intentioned folks putting food packages together, and every package has a jar of peanut butter, and six out of the 10 have peanut allergies, you know,
And especially with diabetes too.
Right.
We've had quite a few people said, you know, with the card, I can get the food that I can eat.
Yes.
And it says with a food package, sometimes it's, I can only use half the stuff that's in the package.
So, right.
So, yeah. So it's all those types of things. And just being able to get people to shop where everybody else shop is very important for people too.
For sure. Yeah. And it's, I think it's, there's a stewardship component too, right? Like right. you touched on, because there's no waste. Like they're, you know, no. folks are buying the food that they know they want, they know they can eat, they know how to prepare, all of that. So, you know, we, you and I had a chance to chat together when we were in London at the World Renew 60th anniversary event. And, you know, I walked away from that conversation going, man, here's a guy that gets it. And here's a guy that's been doing it for a long time. But quick fixes are appealing in today's society.
Right.
But we know, you know, we know that discipleship and working toward God's shalom requires long obedience, moving in the same direction. Now, you've been involved in this work for many years. What has the idea of long obedience in the same direction meant for you as you've engaged with food security?
Just meeting other people that are thinking the same ideas, and sometimes they thought it, but didn't really, it takes a little bit of courage to step out of that, especially in our climate today, is, you know, the whole idea of like the food banks have been here for 40 years. And now recently they're saying, well, charity will never solve the issue. There's other things that have to happen. So it's an opportunity just to kind of broaden some of those thoughts a little bit more in a more holistic way, that because it isn't just food, it's a matter of a lot of the organizations really focus on getting food, but it's much bigger than that. Poverty is, it's building up people's capacity to do things for themselves. And it takes a long time. Even I've heard others that have had similar thoughts, and when they first start speaking out, they said it's almost politically incorrect to come up with this because of the general public, how they buy into this charity model where it's giving, doing for people rather than with.
Thank you to the MICA Center for sponsoring this season of Do Justice. The MICA Center at the King's University helps students and the wider community grow a global vision of justice and renewal. Through classes, workshops, internships, lectures, global learning experience, and community initiatives, the MICA Center brings the ancient Hebrew prophet Micah's call to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God to bear on our contemporary world of global hunger, injustice, systemic poverty, war, and violence. So, John, when did you first start again with Diaconal Ministries? Like, how long have you been on this journey?
Well, since 1987. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I was in grade 5.
Okay. Yeah.
What along that way, where do you find the motivation, the energy? What inspires you as you walk on that journey? Like, because I'm sure there are times where it's like, oh man, this is hard. This is not, we're not moving fast enough. What gives you a sense of, you know, the ability to go on and keep going?
Well, I think I've been encouraged by the stuff, especially over the last, I would say 20 years, that there's a lot more material that's coming out that kind of confirms that our program is going in the right direction. It's never perfect until Christ returns, but in the meantime, this is what we've come up with, flaws, and we realize too that this isn't a complete answer, but yeah, it's kind of changing the story a bit.
Yes.
So it's always encouraging every time I see stuff like that come out. And my understanding of scripture deepens a fair bit. You know, it's it kind of reaffirms some of our thoughts and discussion on these types of things. It's not just something that came out of the woodworks. It's something that our understanding of the Bible and stuff like that has kind of, dovetailed, I think.
Yeah. John, as you've been in this work for a long time, what's a story of God at work that you've been able to see over many years? Like something that may have surprised you, or that when you first started in this journey, you couldn't have predicted that this was going to happen or you were going to see. But yeah, you know, like can you share a story with us?
There was a time when somebody came up and at church they had a real issue with a difficult situation. And rather than trying to fix the problem, we walked alongside this particular family and tried to help them understand the issues that were involved. And you just dig deeper and dig deeper. And then the solution was so simple that it baffled everybody that was involved in it, that the solution was right there. And it was, I think the most important thing was that we just walked alongside this family and helped them walk through it, that everything didn't have to be a crisis thing. It's just a matter of being patient and waiting for God to reveal himself. And yeah, it didn't seem like a whole lot, but the family moved on. And when they moved on, the wife corralled me in kind of a quiet spot in the church and told me, thank you very much for doing what you did, is walking alongside us through that issue. So that's kind of, I think, when you talk about representing Jesus, that's some of the ways that things have happened. And quite often there are things that you go in and you kind of think, okay, this is the solution, and something totally different happens that you didn't imagine. But it worked out that God had his hand in it.
Yeah. John, as I'm sure like you're a mentor to so many people, and you know, you have this wisdom and just this kindness about you. For someone who's taking their first steps in on this path of wanting to serve, to get involved with the kind of work that you do, what kind of encouragement would you offer?
Be patient. One of the things I learned when I was a teenager, or just quite a bit younger, I used to go to the ICS conferences, and we had some pretty interesting people within our denomination. And when we're young, or going to young people's, we had Gerald VanderZand speak to our group. And he kind of advised, he says, there's so much stuff going on in the world that you can't possibly keep up with anything. So the best thing is find one thing that you have a passion for and stick with it and dig into it deeply. And yeah, just stick with it, because you can't figure all this stuff in a 3-year term. And you have to be prepared to spend a lot of time studying and digging into the issues around poverty much deeper.
Wow. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for, you know, sharing your heart. I think what we'll do is we'll encourage folks to sort of check out the stories of the work, the new approaches. We have a couple of articles that we can put in the show description here. And yeah, we'll encourage people to check out your profile on Diaconal Ministries Canada website. John, appreciate all you do. Thanks for spending the time. I hope we have a chance to talk again down the road soon.
Look forward to it.
God bless. Thanks.
The Do Justice podcast is produced and edited by World Renew in partnership with the Office of Social Justice and Center for Public Dialogue of the Christian Reformed Church of North America. Our opening theme was written by Quetzalcoatla. Transitions provided by Valentin Sosnitsky. Until next time, remember that the Lord is righteous, He loves justice, and the upright will see His face.